This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, America. This is Washington Watch on Tuesday, July 12, in the year of our Lord, 2016, coming to you from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm your guest host, Ken Klukowski, Senior Counsel and Director of Strategic Affairs at First Liberty Institute, the largest law firm in the United States exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty. Check out what we're doing there, fighting for your rights at firstliberty.org. Also, Senior Legal Editor for Breitbart News Network, exposing the truth about the liberal left and telling you the real news that the mainstream media tries to bury. Find out what's really going on in your country and your world at Breitbart.com. But I'm not speaking to you today on behalf of First Liberty or Breitbart. Instead, I'm speaking to you as a husband, a father, and a citizen blessed to live in the greatest nation in the history of this world, the United States of America. We're going to be talking about faith, family, and freedom this hour, and we want you to join us. We had an incredible show lined up, and I do mean incredible. I also do mean had an incredible show lined up, as we had some of the leaders from the Republican Party platform ready to come and speak with us today. But legislators and politicians, being what they are running over by multiple hours, and it looks like we have substituted in a new lineup of incredible guests who are going to be on telling you about what's going on as we're reflecting on the debate going on right now, right across the street from me in the room I was just in 5 minutes ago, as these delegates have really been throwing down on some serious issues that I know those of you who listen to this show care deeply about. Marriage has been a hot topic of debate today. So has religious liberty, transgenderism, and an extended conversation on the Constitution of the United States, on abortion, on life, on adoption, and on family life. These have been the issues that have been occupying the delegates' time right across the street. If you would, as we're going through this show, if you're not calling in at the moment, be in prayer for those delegates across the street. Pray for wisdom, pray for grace, and pray that God's will would be done. These are challenging and forceful times that we live in, and each of us are called by God to play a part in that. So what we're going to do in this hour, in this first segment, I'm going to be laying out what I've been witnessing across the room. Also, I have news reports that are coming out on these issues right now. Google Klukowski and Breitbart, or go to Breitbart.com, and you'll see those news reports coming up on these issues that have been debated over this past day. And then as we get into the second segment, we're going to have a leader of the Republican assemblies nationwide, and also someone who serves on the board committees of the National Rifle Association of America, giving his perspective on things. The Second Amendment was a hot topic of discussion today in the platform committee. Then we're going to have one of FRC's own coming in the third segment, running down what happened today regarding religious liberty, marriage, sexuality, abortion, and adoption. And then in the end of the hour, for our last segment, our longest segment, we're going to be opening up for your calls. We want to sound off. Tell us what you think about what you've heard and what you want to see these leaders do as we prepare for tomorrow. And tomorrow as we go into the Rules Committee and ultimately into next week. For those of you who missed the show yesterday and are wondering exactly what it is that we're discussing here, each of America's two great political parties has an annual convention every 4 years where they choose a standard bearer, a leader for the party, who will be that party's nominee to be the next president of the United States. The convention is where each party nominates a president and a vice president candidate, who then battle it out. And then in November, you, the American people, decide which of those individuals will be imbued with the incredible powers of the American presidency, and who will stand at that person's side as vice president. That convention for the Republican Party will be going on here in Cleveland next week. So in the week that leads up to it, in the week that we are in right now, a number of the delegates from that national convention, specially selected, show up for what is called the platform committee, that they debate and they jostle and they engage in speeches to determine what the party is going to be about, what the party stands for, and comes out with a document of over 30,000 words on the broad strokes in principle policies and priorities and goals of the party in terms of the direction that they want to lead the American Republic over the next 4 years. This platform committee is followed on Wednesday and Thursday by what's called the Rules Committee, another group of delegates that'll vote on who can be nominated, what criteria have to be satisfied for someone to be nominated, and the process by which that party determines who to designate as its leaders going into the November election. So it's going to be action-packed, and it's something that all of you want to be weighing in on. And make sure that you're calling in towards the end of the hour. I'll let you know when the phone lines are open, and that's going to jump. Those things are going to jump off this program for you in terms of as we are looking at America's future in 2016. So today, in the time that we have, just to recap what has been going on throughout the day, that there's been a sharp division of opinion among some. It's, first of all, I'll say this. Constitutional conservatives should be very encouraged by the delegates who were selected to be on this platform committee. For those of you who were concerned about the direction of the Republican political party, I think you're going to be encouraged by what you see coming out next Monday of this process going on right now. You know, I want to add at this point that Washington Watch and American Family Radio and its affiliates do not endorse candidates for president of the United States or for any federal office. Any views expressed are the personal views of the host or guests on Washington Watch and do not reflect the views of Washington Watch or any of its radio affiliates. You know, it's in this arena, we respect the rule of law, and it's important to understand those issues in that it's really almost, it's pretty much impossible to talk about a national political convention without ending up expressing some political opinions. So certainly I'm speaking to you as an individual, and the guests that we're about to have on are also speaking in their individual capacities, not for the organizations in which they serve. Now today, as the full body of the Republican Party platform, as they were debating the issues, today's focus was on the U.S. Constitution. They talked about the First Amendment. They talked about free speech rights. Language was adopted condemning government attempts to restrict political speech. We actually see that going on the Democratic side right now in terms of legislation that's being debated that would limit the ability of organizations to be able to communicate with the American people. There's calls for overturning Citizens United, which is the Supreme Court decision where the Supreme Court held that just because a group of citizens get together and pool their funds together, that that does not make them that does not deprive them of their free speech rights. The example was used of the National Rifle Association, where years ago I had an opportunity to work as an employee. Under the law before Citizens United, if a millionaire wanted to spend $1 million on a political ad 30 days before an election, he could do that. But if a group of 10,000 citizens who don't have $1 million sitting around decide to get together and each give $100, putting it in a corporate bank account to pay for that same ad, that would be a federal felony that could get you 5 years in federal prison. Citizens United was the great equalizer that said, no, the rich and poor each have the same First Amendment rights. The fact that ordinary citizens give their own personal small contributions to a group so that the group can express their views. That does not deprive them of their First Amendment rights. If you're a gun owner and support the Second Amendment, you are able to give money to the NRA, and then the NRA can put out a pro-Second Amendment message that you are funding and that that is protected by the First Amendment. That was being discussed today. An unusual issue. There was another gentleman, Clemens from South Carolina, who gave a moving speech about how Indiana needs to, I'm sorry, about how, that's my home state, Indiana, about how the United States of America needs to stand with the nation of Israel, and said, and identified all of these anti-Israel attacks that were coming out as anti-Semitic attacks, and spoke of the need for the American people to stand with Israel and to stand with the Jewish people. He received a standing ovation from his federal, from his fellow delegates in doing that. Then there was a great deal of discussion regarding LGBT issues. There is a small group of delegates from a couple from New York, one from Nevada, one from the District of Columbia, working with what witnesses present, and I myself saw to be a small group of political professionals that they would be huddling with, trying to offer a number of amendments to push LGBT issues on the Republican Party. These amendments, they opposed a constitutional right to marriage. They opposed an amendment that was a language that was, in fact, adopted by the full committee, condemning the Supreme Court's decision in Obergefell and calling upon that, calling upon the Supreme Court to reverse that decision and to restore legal jurisdiction regarding marriage, taking it away from the federal courts and handing it back to the states. There was also language adopted that endorsed religious liberty protections for those who hold sincere views on marriage or sexuality consistent with millennia-old traditional religious faiths, not just Christianity, but certainly Judaism and various other minority faiths as well, protecting their rights of conscience. There was language adopted to support the religious liberty rights of people in the military, that the fact that they put on the uniform does not sacrifice their First Amendment rights. And in fact, they put on that uniform so that they can protect the constitutional liberties of each and every one of us. It is our honor and our obligation to fight to protect their constitutional liberties as they are putting their very lives on the line trying to protect ours. And finally, there was also a debate on the Second Amendment. A call on the Supreme Court to reaffirm and expand the Heller decision in 2008 and the 2010 McDonald decision. There was a call for nationwide legislation that I'll be talking about with my guest right after the break, so that those of you who exercise your Second Amendment right to carry a concealed firearm do not lose that right just because you cross a state line as you're in your car or going on vacation. So constitutional government, the separation of powers, war making, treaties, the military powers of the president as commander in chief, and congressional accountability. Language on all of these issues was debated to the nth degree and adopted, and all of that will be set forth to the American people in next Monday. So be with us after the break. We'll be talking Second Amendment.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th. The Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, Either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Buddy Smith, Senior Vice President of the American Family Association.
I want to take a moment to share two opportunities that we have to become a more powerful voice for Christian America. One is in our radio division. A door has opened for us to increase our outreach in 8 radio markets with a potential of 2.5 million new listeners. We'll take truth to families in places like New Orleans, Corpus Christi, Texas, Jacksonville, Florida, Lexington, Kentucky, and Memphis, Tennessee. The other opportunity is the American Family Studios full-length documentary titled The God Who Speaks, Reaffirming Biblical Authority. Would you please consider a financial gift to help us offset the cost of these projects? Also, please pray that God might use these projects to restore America's moral foundations.
Please donate now at 877-616-2396 or visit afr.net.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Back, America. This is Ken Klukowski, guest host in for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch, broadcasting to you live from Cleveland, Ohio, where right across the street in the room I was in mere minutes ago, delegates from the Republican Party from all over the nation gathered as they are debating and adopting language that will be put before the full party and the party's presidential nominee next week to become the official position of the grand old party for the vision that they have to lead America over the next 4 years. Over the next segment, we are joined by a fascinating guest, one who has a unique perspective that I want him to be able to share with all of you. Willis Lee is a retired lieutenant colonel from the U.S. Army, in fact, a graduate of West Point, an armored unit commander. And now, as a private citizen, he is busily engaged fighting for your constitutional rights. He is president of the National Federation of Republican Assemblies. He is also serving on several committees of the board of directors of the National Rifle Association of America, the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, the Outreach Committee, and the Grassroots Committee. For those of you who are familiar with the structure of the NRA, or like me, is an NRA life member, where he's fighting for your rights there and is in fact now running for the NRA Board of Directors. He too was over in the hearing room, heard the delegates debating these issues. And so regarding the Second Amendment, military, national security affairs, on all of those things, we're honored to welcome Colonel Lee. Colonel, thank you for joining us.
Ken, glad to be here with you, and I'm glad to be able to add my perspective and another set of eyes to what we saw yesterday and today in a very much of a grassroots-oriented building of a national platform. Just incredible work we've seen.
Now, Colonel, what is the single biggest takeaway for you thus far? What is the thing that you have seen or heard that impacted you, that caught your attention the most, that you think people around the country need to know?
First of all, and absolutely most important, is unlike what the Democrats do, this is driven by the grassroots. Our folks come from across the nation. They bring in their ideas. Everyone gets heard. They vote. And at the end of the day, we build a platform that reflects our values and what we believe as Republicans.
Now, talk was going on earlier on as we're looking at some of these issues. Now, on some issues, people of good faith disagree. On other issues, we would say that all red-blooded Americans are able to unify around certain issues. And it really looked to me like the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. That seemed to be something that, from my perspective, the delegates were all on the same page about. What do you think?
Clearly, and without a doubt. Now I'll tell you, what we're all gathered around and what we all view as important and crucial is the Constitution, and that's what we believe in. The Second Amendment came up, especially today, on several different issues. Folks were allowed their opinions, they gave their votes, but the overwhelming majority of these folks, 112 of them from across the nation, believe in our Second Amendment rights and the importance of upholding those rights and ensuring nobody can degrade them.
Now, Colonel Lee, one of the things that I think that really impressed me in that regard is that we talked about the Heller decision in 2008, recognizing an individual right to keep and bear arms. We talked about the McDonald decision in 2010, that individual right is a fundamental right, that you can assert it against your state or city government just like you could the federal government. Both of those Supreme Court decisions were 5-4 decisions. You change one vote, and the dissent becomes the majority, a dissent that said that the Second Amendment has nothing to do with private citizens, that it's just about saying that state governments will always be allowed to arm their uniformed militia units, which in our modern system is the National Guard, to say that the government could ban every private citizen from owning firearms in the Constitution wouldn't raise any obstacle to that. Now, there are some people out there who maybe Donald Trump was not their first choice for president. And what is your perspective now with the untimely death of the late, great Justice Antonin Scalia, the author of the Heller decision? What are your thoughts about the stakes of the Supreme Court when it comes to gun rights in the 2016 election?
Could not be greater, but it's always been important. And it's been important in every presidential election this year, highlighted by the fact that the next president will choose several, not just one, but several different Supreme Court justices. It cannot be Clinton. That's the bottom line. And our offering is Trump, who supports the Second Amendment, supports our gun rights.
In fact, he's an NRA member himself. He has been endorsed by the political arm of the NRA.
And his sons are avid hunters. He doesn't get as much time to get away, but his sons do every summer.
He's a busy man.
A little bit busy, and more busy now. Without a doubt, though, he will be making those selections. If we leave this to Clinton, we know that we'll lose our guns. And there's all of the fallacy that it would never happen in America and it can't happen here. It happens every day where some municipality, some city, or some state tries to take our gun rights in some little bit. Perhaps it's the restriction of ammunition, the restriction of the number of rounds in a magazine, the types of weapons. They're trying and they're working toward it. And if we don't stop them now to uphold our rights, we'll lose them.
Now, in that regard, to close that out, Mr. Trump has put out a list of Supreme Court nominees that he says he would choose from. He also says they may add 4 or 5 to that list. And again, put it out to the American people beforehand that we'll vet all of those. Now, I know some of those judges personally, and each one is a serious conservative judge, some more than others. Some of them are extraordinarily conservative. I mean, Clarence Thomas type, hardcore constitutionalists. But all of them, I would think, would be fantastic on the Second Amendment. If Mr. Trump, as president, were choosing from a list like that, you would be confident in the Second Amendment, its future here in this country.
I'm confident in that list and in any capacity where they are now and as Supreme Court justices. SCOTUS is what this election is all about. And Mr. Trump's the one who can guarantee me my Second Amendment rights. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, in the last 30 seconds that we have, Colonel, there was also talk about military. There was talk about national security. Your reflections as an officer, a retired officer yourself, on what you were hearing on that issue. We've got 20 seconds.
For us, we need to stop the social experimentation. The military is our fighting force. We're the defenders of freedom. The social experiments have to stop now.
We've been talking with retired Lieutenant Colonel Willis Lee, who also serves on various committees with the NRA Board of Directors, giving us his perspective. Thanks so much for being with you, Colonel. God bless you. Thank you for your service.
And thank you, Governor.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
Well, here's something pretty interesting. We are now, the United States of America, the number one country in the world for oil reserves. We have more oil in America than any other country, including Saudi Arabia and other South American countries. That puts us in a very good position should demand begin to pick up. One of the things that I've talked about for a long time is the U.S. gaining some of the market share, frankly, taking away some of the market share of Saudi Arabia and other OPEC nations. There is no reason in the world we shouldn't be able to do that now that the ban on exporting crude oil has been lifted. So good news on the oil front for the United States. The question is, will we have opportunity to take advantage of that? Now, having said that, let me remind all of you that the fracking industry here in America, which is a big part of our oil supplies, over one third of the companies that are actively involved in the fracking industry are in serious financial trouble. Some of them already declaring bankruptcy, and others just remaining limping along with really no end in sight to their financial woes. So something that if you own stock in some of those small oil companies that are involved in fracking, this is going to be a very volatile situation for the rest of the year.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
And we're back, America. This is Ken Klukowski, guest hosting for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch, back with you live from Cleveland, Ohio, the site of the Republican National Convention 2016, as we've been breaking down what's going on with the Platform Committee and over the next 2 days, the Rules Committee, in the run-up to the national extravaganza where Donald Trump and his yet-to-be-named running mate will be the standard bearers to go to war against Hillary Clinton and the Democrats with two radically contrasting visions on the direction to lead the United States of America over the next 4 years. We've been talking over the past segment, Second Amendment, gun rights, military affairs, and now we're going to turn to free speech and religious liberty, as well as family issues, with Mandy N. Kaye from the Family Research Council, a colleague and friend of mine for many years, who is steeped dealing every day up on Capitol Hill and with policymakers on these issues. She is fresh out of the committee hearing room herself, where she has been engaging with the delegates and activists all through today and yesterday. Mandy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me.
What is, obviously, I've been here for a bit now hosting the show while you were still in room as these debates were unfolding. I got to tell you, I wanted to stay in the room. There was stuff going on that I cared deeply about. I'm tearing out pieces for Breitbart on that. Folks, make sure you're going to Breitbart.com and getting those news reports. But we were in the midst of some serious debates right as I walked out. Tell us what's been going on over the past 45 minutes in the room and what your takeaway is on it.
Sure thing. We're the last subcommittee draft that they're reviewing is on the Constitution. So, of course, a lot of important information from judges to fetal tissue bans and not funding Planned Parenthood, which is definitely something that's very important to conservatives across the nation and something that's very important to our delegates as well.
Now, what has been the biggest surprise for you over today's debates? Is there anything that just really shocked you as the issues that are core issues for our listeners were unfolding?
You know, I've actually been very surprised by how much unity there is in the Republican Party within the GOP. Of course, we have a few amendments that have been offered on LGBT issues and trying to create special protections.
And we mentioned those earlier in the show.
Yeah, but what surprised me a little bit was that there wasn't a lot of support for that. So I expected there to be a little bit more of diverse views, a little bit less unity. But the Republican Party, the delegates that are serving on the platform committee are very unified to ensure that religious freedom is protected and that traditional views of marriage and pro-life views are set forth in the platform.
Now, see, Mandy, if anyone's listening to the mainstream media, they would think there's really no dissent on these things, that there's just a few backwards, backwaters, ignorant cavemen out there dragging their knuckles who aren't on board with all the new orthodoxy, but that enlightened people and professional people and people who understand how public affairs works, that they're all on the same page. What we've seen over the past couple days is that that is not the case, that there are a great many people who are successful professionals, who are educated people, who are people from every walk of life, who believe that marriage is between one man and one woman, who believe that they have a fundamental right, a God-given right, recognized by the U.S. Constitution, to be able to share their thoughts and beliefs without the government punish them, to be able to live their lives according to their faith without the government punishing them or shutting down their business or saying that they're not allowed to teach their children. It looks like in America's two-party system, a majority of the leadership of one of those parties, the Republican Party, seems to stand with people of faith and traditional values on these issues. That's what I've seen over the past 2 days.
Definitely. And I think that we could see, I had the pleasure of sitting right beside the media. And it's incredible because you can tell what they're interested
Careful.
In.
Careful. We're on a media program right now, and you're talking to a journalist.
This is true. But it's amazing to see how bored they look between votes on marriage-related issues. And when there was a vote that was taken by the raising of hands, you could see all of the media stand up to go and take photos of those votes. And so it was very obvious in watching the media that that was what they were there to catalog, to write about, and to ensure the American people that there was quite a bit of debate, and I'm sure that that's going to be inflamed quite a bit in how the mainstream reports these issues. But that's why we have great journalists like you, Ken.
I appreciate that. Well, you know, in the rest of my professional life, don't worry, I'm not a journalist, I'm a lawyer. And that's like, oh, shucks. Then you realize that lawyers have even lower approval ratings than journalists. Hey, by the way, you're a lawyer, aren't you, Mandy?
I am.
Okay, well, at least we're even on that score. Well, in that regard, I'll tell you, folks, I want to really encourage each of you, and I think Mandy's going to be with me on this, but I'm going to have her close with this thought. For people for whom maybe Donald Trump wasn't their first choice for president, maybe he wasn't their second or their third, it looks like as of next week it's going to be official that it's a choice between him or Hillary Clinton for president of the United States. It looks like the party platform that he's going to be presented to adopt and make his own and become the champion of is a very serious constitutional conservative document that will be a profound contrast to what Hillary's going to put forward. Your thoughts? We've got 10 seconds.
I think that this platform is definitely something that Republicans can be proud of, whether Trump was their first choice for the nominee or not. Standing for Republican principles and what this platform contains is important.
Mandy and Kali, thanks for being with us. We're back with your calls after the break.
After 8 years of sustained attack on our most cherished values by the Obama administration, the 2016 presidential election will prove to be a critical juncture for our nation. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with the Values Voter Presidential Voter Guide. Determining the right presidential candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin of political rhetoric. Our voter guide includes each candidate's answer to important questions affecting faith, family, and freedom. It compiles the candidates' stated positions on a range of issues, including Planned Parenthood funding, the repeal of Obamacare, the future of natural marriage, the protection of religious liberty, and more. Go to frcaction.org/2016 to view the Values Voter Guide. You can also watch videos of the candidates explain how they would protect our religious freedom as president. Again, that's frcaction.org/2016.
The Decision America Tour with Franklin Graham.
I'm traveling to all 50 states to hold prayer rallies. We're asking Christians to take a stand and pray and engage in your community by living and sharing your faith at home, in public, and at the ballot box. And I'm going to be sharing the gospel.
You'll find rally dates and locations, plus information on how you can be involved at DecisionAmericaTour.com.
Now is the time to take a stand.
Consider serving the Lord with Friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. As I left the Donald Trump meeting in New York City recently, I prayed a brief prayer that the Lord would send me a cab driver that I could minister to. My driver was from Bangladesh. He said, "See this? This cell phone has changed my life. I can listen to things and learn." He made it clear to me that he had read the Bible and the Quran many times. I asked, "So what about God? What do you think about where the Bible says that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God?" He stopped for a moment and said, "That's why I say I'm seeking. It might very well be your words one day that I'm reminded by, and I bow my knee to your God." The time was short. The taxicab door closed. The cell phone, the Quran, the Bible, the personal sharing of God's word. May God be gracious to this New York City cab driver as he was to me once upon a time when I was seeking and hardly knew it. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
And America, we are back and we are taking your calls, opening up the phone lines at 866-372-7234. Coming to you again live from Cleveland, Ohio, where America is preparing to turn its eyes on the Republican National Convention next year. We've been talking today, as we did yesterday, about the platform that the Republican Party is adopting and will present to its presidential nominee next week, who is going to be Donald J. Trump, as well as a vice presidential nominee that Mr. Trump will be unveiling in just a few days. We want to know your thoughts on these things at 866-372-7234, especially if you disagree with me. It's good to know when people agree with you. I certainly enjoy it. I like the encouragement. But the reality is we're a country of over 300 million Americans. And I know that some of you might not agree on something you've heard today. You might have a different viewpoint, and it's one that you think is worth making. If so, this is your platform. Come on and speak to a million of your fellow Americans, telling them what you think. Let's hash it out. Figure it out. Iron sharpens iron. Let's try and get right together on this so that we can move our country in the right direction together. So in that regard, folks, be calling now. I see the caller boards lighting up right now. You go ahead and join them at 866-372-7234. Your chance to sound off and persuade your fellow Americans. We're going to start off with Tony from Oklahoma. Tony from Oklahoma, you're on Washington Watch.
Well, hi, Ken. I appreciate you taking my call.
Absolutely.
I had a couple of questions. One was, how many people are on this on the platform committee, and do they represent all the states?
Those are great questions. I'm regretting that I've seen the number. If I'm going to eyeball it, it's somewhere upwards of 100. You do. I can't think of a state that does not have at least one delegate. I can think of a number of states that have two. So I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 100, and roughly perhaps two delegates from each state. Beyond that, though, I recall there's also two delegates from D.C. I know there's one from America Samoa. I know there's one from Puerto Rico. So it looks like the territories have it as well. If I had to guess, I'd say it's about 120, and they represent a broad cross-section of the party, people of different religious faiths, different genders, different walks of life. Different skin colors chosen to represent their state here. So thanks for that, and I hope that that gives everyone a clearer perspective of what's going on that. Turning now to Ian from Maryland. Ian from Maryland, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi. It's the first time I've ever done this, and I'm somewhere in Maryland where you're pretty much the only channel I can get.
We appreciate that,
I'm
19, Ian.
This is my... Sorry?
We appreciate that.
Sorry, I'm asking about gay marriage. I just don't really understand the Republican plank on gay marriage exactly. I'm not a Christian or anything. It's just, I don't understand why the plank is against gay marriage.
Well, it's let me put to you this way. What do you see, and I appreciate you very much sharing a perspective which is less common on this show. I think that's what this show is all about. It's about being able to hash out these things. What do you see? What is marriage as far as the law is concerned?
The civil union. As far as the law is concerned, my girlfriend's sister got married for tax purposes, and pretty much so far, sharing.
Okay, sure. Care. Yeah, I got you. I appreciate your thoughts on that. Ian, the governmental purpose in marriage, it's not the government's concern as to who you like or who you love. It's not the government's business as to what makes you or anyone else feel emotionally happy. And it's not the government's business as to what kind of sexual activities you would enjoy. That's not what marriage laws are about. Marriage laws are, in fact, not about adults. They're about children. The reason every civilization has marriage laws is because every civilization has an existential imperative in raising a next generation, and not just physically creating them, but making sure that they are well educated, well provided for, that they are ready to take the reins as they come to adulthood. So in every society for thousands of years of human civilization, the purpose of marriage laws is just to recognize the biological reality that every time a baby is born into this world, that baby comes about as the result of sexual union between one and only one man with one and only one woman. And the purpose of marriage laws is to bind that man and woman together to make sure that they are not creating children with anyone except each other, and to impose upon each of them legal obligations and commitments to care for themselves and to care for the children that their union creates. That is society's interest in marriage. Now, here in the debate we've been having over the past few years in this country, there's a union issue that for, even though that's government's interest in marriage and that's the only interest in marriage, whether or not a person is a person of faith or not. Now, for Christians and for people of many other faiths as well, observant Jews, I mean, even Muslims, there's a religious significance for those people regarding marriage that we, as Bible-believing Christians, speaking of myself and millions of people like me, that we see marriage as a sacred institution created by Almighty God. for the well-being of his creation and for the good of man, and that as such, since God is the creator of it, observant Christians believe that he has the right to define it just as he has the right to define all things. He's the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He is the Almighty God of the universe, and we are all his creatures. We are all his servants. And so for Christians, this is an issue also of religious liberty and free speech, to be able to continue living out their lives and sharing their faith regarding marriage and regarding sexuality, because the Bible teaches that the marriage bed should be kept pure, that sexuality, sexual behavior, is to be reserved between one man and one woman in the context of a marital bond. So that's where Christians get the perspective that they have regarding marriage and sexuality. And many of those people are Republicans. And that's where you get both that governmental interest and the views of people of faith who are leaders in the leaders in the Republican Party, that's where you get the Republican stand on marriage. Does that all make sense to you? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess we're just going to have to agree to disagree. I'm not a Christian, and I still don't understand. I still don't fully get. The Republican Party sort of merging church and state, and making gay marriage illegal.
Oh goodness! Well, hey, tell you what. Well, no, let's tackle that before you go. I think that's great because that doesn't even have anything to do with marriage. So you think there's a wall of separation between church and state?
Yeah, I think that creates a healthy government to keep us far away from any sort of theocracy.
Where is that found? Where is that found in the U.S. Constitution? A wall of separation between church and state.
The First Amendment is. You're allowed to.
No, the First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And then it goes on to speak about free speech or other things.
Yeah.
The Constitution never says separation of church and state. The Constitution says that the government shall not establish a religion. Now, what that meant in 1791 when the First Amendment was ratified is the same thing it means today. And that is that the federal government cannot officially adopt a particular religious belief. They can't order you to believe in the virgin birth. They can't tell you whether communion is literally the body and blood of Christ, or if it's just a memorial. They can't say whether there's only one God or that God exists in three persons. The Establishment Clause just says that the government can't take such official theological positions. In other words, that in this country you have the legal right to be theologically wrong, and that the government cannot coerce any citizen to have to join a religion or participate in it that violates its conscience. Now, that has nothing to do with what you're discussing. What you're talking about is whether people of faith are free to vote their conscience when they're making public policy. That, in fact, not only does the Constitution not forbid that, but I'd encourage you, as you get off with us here in a second, go look up George Washington, one of the more secular of the founding fathers, you know, certainly not an evangelical Christian. Go read his farewell address, where he referred to religion and morality separately as what he called the twin pillars for a successful civilization. Look up what John Adams says, a more religious founder, in terms of that he said our form of government is designed for a moral and religious people and is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Thomas Jefferson, again, a deist himself, a very secular founder, said that our limited form of government could not succeed without what he called a virtuous citizenry, and that he supported legislation whereby Congress would distribute copies of the Bible to school children. These were the founders of our country. Now, you don't think that they were trying to violate the Constitution that they had just adopted when they did those things, right? More likely, they thought that their actions were not inconsistent with the Constitution?
I have no idea about what you just said, but you do bring up a few good points.
Well, Ian, that's important, and I'm grateful that you would call in. I mean, you're 19 years old. It's you're a man. You'll be voting now as an election. You're also a young person. I'd encourage you. I respect your honesty that you say you have no clue about these things that I just told you. Look, I'm a published constitutional scholar. I teach constitutional law at law school. this is important stuff. Check it out. Research those things. You're obviously a bright young man. Research these things, explore it for yourself, and then let those inform your vote. Ian, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. Folks, we're going to turn now to Sophie from Michigan. I took extended time there with Ian because I thought that was just a fascinating exchange, and that was to everyone's benefit. And I'm very grateful that Ian would join our show and express views that, again, I think I'm glad we had viewers who disagree with us. Sophie, do you disagree with me?
Yeah.
Sophie from Michigan, are you with us?
Your show. Yes, I do.
Oh, thank you. Then you probably don't disagree with me.
Yeah, I do. I do disagree with you.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, let's lay that out. Where do we disagree?
So I was just wondering, how do you separate race?
I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you, Sophie. Can you ask that question again?
Yeah. How do you separate racism from Trump's plans to export Muslims and close borders?
I didn't see anything from Trump's plans regarding exporting Muslims, but let's take those in reverse order. It's we are right now, that there are 192 nations upon this earth. We are the only one that does not make a concerted effort right now to control our borders. In fact, if you go to Mexico's southern border, I've been to 26 countries, Sophie. I've been to every inhabited continent on Earth, some of them multiple times, many times. And there are so many things about this country. We are truly exceptional. We are a city on a hill. Let me tell you, it's if you go down to the southern Mexican border, they have armed troops to prevent people from entering their country on their southern border. We are the only country in the world that doesn't attempt to do so. And Ronald Reagan said that a nation without borders is no nation at all. And Reagan himself went on to call for the rigorous defending and strengthening of America's border. That's not an issue of racism. I mean, and I'll speak for myself here. I do not want any illegal alien in this country, regardless of their skin color, regardless of their sex. I want a very broad, generous, compassionate immigration policy. And Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution says that Congress is the one who creates that. And when they do, that the President of the United States is bound by oath to faithfully execute those laws. Now, and I don't just want the southern border secure. I want the northern border secure. I want our ports of entry secure. So how is that racism when that applies to all persons, regardless of their skin color?
Because he's not saying that it applies to all persons, regardless of their skin color. He's directly pointing out Muslims and Mexicans. So...
Is Muslim a race? I think there's people of multiple racial groups in the Islamic faith.
Well, it's a religion, and I would call it racist to keep Muslims out of our country just because they're Muslims. It's at least bigotry.
Okay, so if someone is a white Muslim from a country that sponsors terrorism and President Trump does not want that white Muslim coming in, that's racism? I think I'm confused on your on what you think racist means. Okay, well, racism means to discriminate against a person based on their race. So if you're making a policy decision on any other basis, then by definition, it's not racism. I think Trump has revised his position regarding Muslims to say he wants to restrict Muslim immigration from countries that we certify as being hotbeds of terrorism. But I'll tell you, I think that you're raising important points. I mean, these are things that Donald Trump will have to sell to the American people. And I appreciate so much you calling in and all of our callers today calling in on a hot show here on Washington Watch. I'm Ken Klukowski. You've been listening to us broadcast live from Cleveland, Ohio. We're going to be here for the rest of the week covering these delegates and these leaders.
Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line, at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.